Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. We're going to start. I'm going to call to order the executive committee agenda for the Shell Valley Fisheries and Government for Monday, January 29th, 2022. The board will be here. Roll call, please.
City of Shell.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Indio. 29 Hand Palms Band Mission Indians. Torres Martinez Desert Puya Indian. Cabazon Band Puya Indian.
Here.
Charles Caliente Band Puya Indian. City of Indian Wells.
Here.
City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Palm Brother.
Here.
City of Requena.
Present.
City of Blight.
Here.
County of Riverside.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
Present.
Chair, we have four.
Thank you very much. I'd also like to welcome, before we do the Pledge of Allegiance, in the first meeting of the new year, we have some new members here. So I'd like to welcome the mayor of Palm Springs, Jeffrey Bernstein. Welcome.
Chair.
And then in the city of Indio, Councilmember Furman will be representing them. He's back around. Late. The city of Indian Wells, Mayor Sanders.
Thank you.
Thank you. And welcome back, Indio City. Rotating back in the mayor.
Thanks, Scott.
Mark from both. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and City of Rancho Mirage.
Please join me in Pledge of Allegiance to our wonderful country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Here to the flag which stands ready to guide us to victory.
The grand entrance I just announced.
Yeah.
Indio. Councilmember Furman.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
He waited outside for. I'd also like to remind everybody that we are live on YouTube here.
So we're not YouTube.
Where do we go?
Zoom.
Zoom. So, and also our attorney, Mike Jager, who's also on. So there's any questions for the attorney who was. We're going to move to any modifications from the agenda?
There are none.
So we're going to move to public comments on agenda items. And I believe, Brad Anderson, you have comments on item 8V of the boy and C.
Hello, I'm Brad Anderson. I'm going to be checking out my evening supervision. I have a lot of the only person that I've heard of since the tag from the new people to work. Started
Okay, well, I'm going to speak in regards to where we'd like to speak from the audience on any items on the agenda. See nobody else? We're going to move to the next item, which is Chair and Executive Director announcements. I do not have any announcements, Mr. Director.
I have none.
All right. Not for
grabbing. I never do appreciate that.
Item 7 is our consent calendar. We have 3 items on the consent calendar. No one would like to pull any of those items. We may want to make sure.
Second.
Mr. Chair, I would abstain from A and B. That wasn't here.
India will be abstaining from A and B.
Mr. Chairman, I will abstain as well.
So, or any member would like to vote no for the G.
I think I'm abstaining as well.
Yeah, and I believe that Michael. Correct us if we're wrong, but the abstains will vote to the majority and will not affect the need for the vote in this case.
Erica, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
And I will call in if he does otherwise.
I think we'll be okay.
You think there was representation from us?
Yeah.
What?
Representation from us.
Yes.
Do you have motions from Rochella has second from Plum Desert. Do we need to move more?
No, but how many people are asking? Then.
Can you raise your hand? If they were sitting.
I'm fine. You did well. Already started trouble. All is in favor?
Aye.
Joey?
Yes, sir.
You're very welcome. Item 7.1 is item cell order for consent calendar. There was none. Item 8 is discussion. Our first one is presentation, preview of policies and issues emerging in California's 2024 legislature. Jesse Ramirez. Jesse is the new Riverside County Division Manager for Cal City.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for your time this evening. Let's get into the slide for you guys to give you all some updates on Cal City. Maybe officially moved to Cal Cities. I got hired on October. As you can imagine, it's been like drinking out of a bottle. So, Meredith, if you have any questions, that's my personal work cell there. You feel free to reach out anytime, just through text or call. You can go ahead. In December, we had our first meeting, last meeting of 2023, the first meeting that I know put together. And so we had our elections done. The president of Riverside County, Liz Emily, the city of Cala Mesa. The vice president is Jeff Domenicius from the city of Corona. And our second vice is Colleen Wallace from Van, our division directors. Many of you guys now staying away from the city of Indian Wells. And our immediate past president is Michael Vargas from the city of Paris. And the Eastern representative is Denise Delgado, city of Coachella. We have a myriad of events coming up, and here's a few just to touch on some. February 15th, we're going to be hosting an election. We'll be hearing from both counties. This is the first time Cal Cities has ever done a full election event, and I want to be, you know, begin another counties and hearing on upcoming issues such as housing, whereas development, and obviously homelessness as this purpose three items that will strong. So we're going to be hearing some updates from our CEOs from both counties on that day. If you'd like to reserve, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to put you on the list. The other event, major one coming up here is City Managers Conference, February 7th through 9th. I think the majority of the council members or cities out here in Coachella are represented on that conference. And so I'm looking forward to spending some time with staff. You can make a decision on buying the insurance again. Please feel free to reach out. Legislation. This is one of the bills we've been working on over the last 30 months. It obviously has grown into a bit of a frenzy in Sacramento. 81,000 was proposed by Assemblymember Reyes. Cal Cities submitted a letter of opposition for this particular bill in hopes that we can work with the author and the speakers on this to kind of iron out some of the details. The bill was pulled, and Speaker Rivas basically put it in a report here at the state level with both state, all stakeholders, both private, environmental, and one equitable legislation from that. The other aspect of this is that we put together a working committee, and again, this has never been done with Cal Cities, but I think this is a good step in the right direction. We have five representatives from Riverside County Division and four representatives from San Bernardino County Division. All of those elected officials and city managers are working closely together with the Speaker's office to input on behalf of our region. So if you have any questions regarding that, please let me know. He knows on the committee and he represents the Coachella Valley portion of this conversation. So. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. But again, this is just a show we are 6 months hoping to get someone to make. And that's it. That's all I've got for you. If you have any questions, this is myself. Please feel free to reach out for any of those events. If there's any legislative priorities that you as a body or your cities are dealing with, please reach out. We'd be happy to put together a letter of support and advocate for you all on those BMs. So. If you have any questions, I feel free to answer them. If not, please feel free to reach out.
Jesse, welcome. And
thank you.
You guys could all remember and moved on to another position, public information officer for one of the water districts. What was that? So Jesse's a new mayor?
Yeah.
Welcome. Any questions for that?
I'll call you about energy.
Yeah, please do. Anything you guys need, please let me know. We'll call the way. Like I said, our goal here is to make sure we get enough momentum behind some of these good bills and.
Thank you. Before we move on to the item, I do still to make one announcement. There's probably of us here that made the Riverside County Transportation Commission annual workshop. And just wanted to let everybody know that one of the items on it reaffirming the importance of CV Rail for the Chilla Valley and Lake. They're going to let most city Duke it out on where the stations are going to come in the future, but it has to be reaffirmed and continue to focus on. Right, moving to item 8B, dust storms and poor air quality likely resulting from tropical storm pillars. Here, is that here?
You know, I have been building here. It's a little easier. And my apologies to the three or four or five of you that were at the Energy and Sustainability Committee meeting where I gave a presentation. And I'm trying to do this one a little, but I know our supervisor will probably add on to it based on the conversations we've had with South Coast Air Quality Management District. And we'll summarize some of that. So, PM10. I think you all, some of you know what that is. Maybe all of you do. I'm going to go over this a little bit on public health, a little bit about what we do in Coachella Valley to address dust, PM10, what's going on with our systems, why perhaps we had a spike in PM10 levels, and what we call the let's blame Hillary hypothesis, and what we're doing, what we should be doing to mitigate the impacts. Public health, PM10, really small particulate matter. It's not just sand, it's very small particulate matter. And I'm going to have Dr. Emily Nelson, who is online, a consultant with CUNY, here today in person, explain what the public health impacts are, because this is certainly a significant issue in the Coachella Valley, and it has been for a really long time. Dr. Nelson, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Right.
Yes, okay. Yes. PM10, the very small particles, less than 10 microns in diameter, can penetrate through your nose and your lungs and actually land on your lung tissue, causing both short and long-term damage, depending on the exposure. The tissue damage can cause lung inflammation, can impact our respiratory and our cardiovascular health, and specifically it exacerbates asthma. And increases all kinds of other respiratory diseases. We've actually shown statistically significant increases in hospital admissions, emergency room visits, and even mortality here in the Coachella Valley on the day of a very high PM10 concentration, as well as up to 4 days after. So the people that are at greatest risk are those with older adults, of course, that have chronic heart or lung disease, but also children and asthmatics. Children are more susceptible just because they have a smaller body size, but they breathe more air than an adult per pound of weight, and they spend more time outside. So they're breathing faster, they're exposed to the concentrations, especially during daytime hours when they're outside playing. Also, just to say, the PM10 standards that EPA has established are health-based standards. They're based on many decades of health studies that have shown these kinds of health effects as a result of exposure.
Thank you very much, and we'll hear more from Emily in a minute. So we are a non-attainment area for PM10. We certainly are a non-attainment area for other things related to ozone, but the ozone comes in from the west. The PM10, we grow globally, and that is why we really focus a lot of attention on it, so the South Coast Air Quality Management District. So, control measures. I'll remind you of our longtime partnership. In fact, Emily's been a part of that partnership for over 20 years. We've been working with the district on what are called control measures. And the South Coast Air Quality Management District is responsible for putting these control measures forward, getting EPA's approval on them. And EPA, the federal and state governments, look over the district's shoulders to make sure that we are all in compliance. And if they're not, they do more than slap us on the hand. They take things away from us, like transportation dollars. We've all implemented, you all have implemented dust control measures, those signs up on the fences, the green stuff on the soil. If there's dust coming from a construction site, your developers and can get in trouble and get significant fine. The most significant control measure we implement as a single control measure, however, is our street sweeping program that CDOT wants with support from the cities, the county, and from outside loan sources. And this is something we don't pay a lot of attention to. In this committee, your Energy and Sustainability Committee does every once in a while when we hire a new set of sweepers or hire a sweeping company to do this. Most of the work that we do is all on the big arterial streets throughout the Coachella Valley, the trains reach everywhere. It just kind of shows you all the streets that we sweep, and most of the sweepers are operating in the wee hours. So you probably don't see them. We do get grants, which again brings down the cost of running the program toward cities. We can see that. We know why that we have a PM10 problem, and of course that is because sand and gravel and mud come down our alluvial fans and into the heart of the Coachella Valley, and that of course the wind picks that up. Well, typically that wind's picking up, you know, sand again is not terribly warm, but that certainly is annoying if you're driving across Indian or Geon Butte, long places. So what happens to the sand when it hits the roadway? When it hits the roadway, we run over and move over, and it goes up in the air, so it goes lumps. Hence, why we want teaching the water. So, we know this system works, how the system works, and you all know what time of year is the busiest for PM10 control, right? Coming up on soon time. Is really what can be really windy, and so can be great as. Of course, the other kind of managing order is for Coachella Valley Conservation Commission, where we protect sandy areas and sand sources, and we want sand to move into sandy habitat to protect endangered species that rely on. So we had a recent spike on PM10 levels. How many of you or in the desert on those miserable days in September and October. So was I. Backing up, really noted that federal standards are health-based, and I assume the state ones are too, but like most health regulations, the state takes part of the money from the government, and so their standards are more significant or severe. With respect to those federal standards, we've exceeded them a few times in recent years, two times in 2018, one time in 2020. In September and October of last year, we exceeded them five times. So we all realized something was different. Something was different, and something was different for those of us that experience this. We've seen something different about dust. It persisted in the air for days. Mm-hmm. And the minute you thought you were cleaning it up, you go outside and it's all over the place again. That dust was particularly fine. And the finer that dust is, the more challenging it is. Don't say it's damp and everything else. I'm going to have Emily describe this. These are the readings from Mecca on November 7th. And we could have put down a few minutes.
For those of you,
well, sure. In desert hot springs, you think, oh, it's a particularly windy day in November.
September.
And air quality is fantastic. Okay. Looking down valley. Well, guess what happens is we head southeast in a minute. And describe what's happening and why we're particularly, why it's particularly concerned.
Well, yes. The dust is being emitted from, as you're going to describe later, the mud flows, and then it travels down valley. So the source is, of course, upwind. But the worst days that have been measured since Hurricane Hillary or Tropical Storm Hillary have been from the middle of September through the end of October so far. And on this specific day, we did not exceed the federal standard for the entire 24 hours. As you can see, the federal standard's only 150 micrograms, but during afternoon hours, when children are home from school, they're playing outside, they're doing cross-country practicing, football practices, those numbers are very high. And so if they're exposed, even for only an hour or a two-hour period at very high numbers, those particles don't, we cannot remove them. Our bodies cannot remove them from our lung tissue once they are in our lungs. So we need to make sure that even on days when we haven't exceeded the federal standard, that we need to have some meaningful control of these emissions to protect our community, especially that lower valley area. We know that the children in the lower valley have a higher incidence of asthma. They are less well managed by a trained pulmonologist or allergist. And so if they're exposed at these very high levels, I'm very concerned about what our retrospective studies will show in terms of the health effects as a result of this. Back when we had our energy and sustainability meeting, I think that was only the 11th of January, there was 1 hour during at 9 a.m. that had gotten up to 1,151 micrograms per cubic meter. So we're talking almost three times that 4 p.m. spike. And that was at 9 a.m. when kids might have been outside during recess, certainly on a beautiful day, people are outside going for a walk or a jog. We're just very, very concerned about even those short-term, less than 24-hour exposures. If they're at 1 a.m., it's not likely we're being exposed, especially on a cold night. We have our windows closed and we're sleeping, so we're not inhaling lots of extra air. It's the daytime hours that are of concern to us.
So a lot of people are working in that part of the valley outside all day, so they are being exposed to this. So you saw this graph, windiest time of year. First street sweepers actually log how much they pick up. I mean, tons of PM10. Handy thing to look at, right? Tons of PM10 picking up. Is at the end of the year. We'd expect this to be in, the high point to be in May. August and September, and as late as December. So obviously something is up. And I need to wait for all the facts to come out to you and say you should do something. We should be doing something, and we are. Get to them in a minute. But you see, something different has happened. We're fairly certain it's related to this.
Blaine Miller.
We know this system. And we know what happened. You've heard about the disaster. Bruce from the county, thank you, supervisor, for bringing him in and explaining what has happened, what can be done. It was a massive storm, unprecedented. Does Wilder's because I think you're still digging out, made some progress on some of the crossings, but still have many months, if not years, to fix some of the damage there. And what we got out of that is a lot of mud. It was unprecedented. And we look at the size of river and sand that we usually have down the Whitewater River Wash. You can't see the diameter of clay on this scale. So the best we can calculate, we've got about 5,000, 6,000 acres of mud flows that are still in the Coachella Valley. And you saw these images. I don't probably need to repeat them, but again, unprecedented. And so what we had to do in that disaster is dig out. Mayor Carnival, they had to dig out.
Actually, the city took
the brunt of a lot of the digging out. And in the emergency, you just pile this fine silt up. We're piling now silt up in some of the windiest parts of the Coachella Valley, making it even more likely to be airborne. So we've got these piles of silty sediment out there. And I see trouble. And Emily does too. So what we don't know the low max. Will the sky continue to fall? I don't know, but I don't want to wait for all the facts because we have certain things like a tennis tournament and events.
Ms. Chandler. The city of Dustville. They link to Coachella. It happened, at the earliest time of year. We cannot risk the economic impact that major disappears going on here.
Wow.
And we know, which the impacts down valley, even for non-event days, the impacts on public health. So, what are we doing? Emily and I called the district right away. And same time we were alarmed, they were too. There were predictive models that issued warnings, didn't work anymore. The warnings that they issue are generally when the speed limit on wind is 25 miles an hour. We were having wind of 12 miles an hour in September, which was causing massive dust storms. So they adjusted their warning, and they were starting to do a much better job predicting these events and getting the word out. We don't adjust that. The supervisors urging, they're putting out more monitors. We're going to get more data. That's certainly a good thing. You know, still working on putting one into the Thousand Palms area. They've got one now operational again in Indio. We had one a long time ago there. Now it's operational again. And what you all have been doing, and certainly Cathedral City is a great example of this, wherever possible, putting down that soil cement, that green stuff on the ground, plant up the soil so it does not blow. And this is an eligible expense for FEMA. And this was 6 months after the declaration of disaster. Apply this wherever you can. This is a message that I've been putting out there with the city managers. Thank you. Charlie, doing a lot of work on this. I think $4.5 million worth so far. And it will be reimbursed eventually by FEMA. I know that can be a capital issue. Caltrans has gotten message too. You've seen I-10. You see the trucks spraying and soil stabilizer as well. With respect to data, Emily and I have been in contact with the county, Riverside County Health System, and we will get retrospective data eventually, but that filters in later. What are the impacts on the health system for having these massive dust bowls? Lastly, I want to note that our supervisor has asked his staff at South Coast to pay a little bit more attention to us out here, right, Supervisor? And some of the staff is coming out on February 8th now to our energy sustainability meeting and giving us a little bit more information on what they are doing on this front, as well as updating on other OZone-related matters. Mr. Chair, it's okay to turn over to the supervisor in case he has any points to make. He is our county's representative on the South Coast Air Quality Management District's board.
Just very quickly, I think that photo was taken 20 years ago. I thought I had a bad hair. And moreover, I think the time is, it's about time, right? We talked about this so many meetings after meeting after meeting, conversations about the fact that HUMD doesn't really reach out as far as our desert as they tend to in other areas throughout Southern California. I think to some degree, I feel like we've been somewhat neglected. And it's not to say that others before me didn't do a good job or did not attempt. I just think that overall, the situation is usually going to be worse. And they're beginning to see that there's no choice here in this matter. And so the fact that CVAG and all our cities are engaged is an awesome effort to advance our work. But also say that there before that the nonprofits and the religious groups headed by different priests have engaged in these type of efforts where they've seen how these disasters and how the winds have caused a lot of suffering and struggle within the North Shore, Mecca, Hermel areas. And they're beginning to organize.
So I think it's timely. I look forward to that conversation. How much more can be done? I'm not exactly sure. I mean, what other alternatives or tools are out there for us to combat the dust in the air? Hopefully maybe it can be has some ideas. I'm sure maybe some of you might have some ideas, and that would be the time to bring them up. But it's also important that we continue to advocate for our resources here for this area. That it, with AQMD, and then as well with CAR. Right? So when we talk about AQMD, we're talking about, for the most part, stationary sources, but yet air monitoring. And when we talk about CAR, we're talking about mobile sources, which is going to have an impact on us in the future as well. Knowing that warehouses are not going to go away. Distribution centers are going to continue to grow. And we're going to have much more diesel coming to this area, which will only compound the situation. So I'll leave it at that. And I also just want to say thank you, Tom, for, I mean, you brought this to my attention, this, the connecting the dots of how, you know, we've always thought about it from a public health perspective, which is important. But I don't think we've ever really had this type of conversation, at least not at AQMD. We're talking about the economics then. And mind you, Shell Valley, you know, we're an $8 million industry. We're in that charge. And if this gets any worse, obviously it's going to have an impact on the economy. So,
Supervisor, you mentioned at Energy and Sustainability that you have retained a consultant to assist in a little bit extra oomph for the Coachella Valley and the AQMD. Can you share that, what role and what the...
Yeah, thank you for reminding me, Linda. I'm sure you all know the individual that lives here in Palm Beach, by the name of Brian Stanley.
Yeah.
In any event, obviously he knows bureaucracies, he understands policy. The individual I had before, Guillermo, he'll be moving on. He's about ready to retire. And although he's done great work and worked for me, other legislators in the course of his lifetime, he's not from the area. He doesn't feel or see the impacts that we feel and we see all the time, especially when we have these storms. So, Brian is going to be, he's getting his feet wet. He's been going to meetings up in Diamond Bar when we have them. I sit on a few different committees, like stationary sources, the admin committee, legislative committee, and he guides me on those efforts as well. But he'll be playing a much larger role with us here at CBank in the near future. I'm actually, I think he's got a cold. I mentioned to him that we're having this meeting, but I'm not sure if he's even on or he's not on, but he will be engaging with us in the future.
You know, if I might, on this very matter, when I contacted the supervisor and talked to him about this and talked to him about the district's involvement and then did with Emily as well, I think it was Emily pointing out, if this happened, Diamond Bar, that headquarters of South Coast Air Management District, they would be, there would be an air-free shower. It was that bad. I don't, if you guys were there here on one of the worst days, I left the Coachella Valley. It wasn't about bringing people in. There were people, Manuel, I think you did too. People left the Coachella Valley for a weekend because it was that bad. Imagine the economic impact that were to happen. And I'm hopeful that my crying wolf isn't crying wolf, but given potential impact, health and economic. A little crying wolf, a few million dollars,
yeah,
who's been reimbursed, is an insurance policy and a really important one. So, for what it's worth,
Joe. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree. I think that a few million dollars to work on, you know, how we can seal the desert, not a bad idea. I think we probably need to take a step in a little more and learn from, say, Arizona and Maricopa County as well as Phoenix, where they're actually doing climate change plans. They're doing, in some cases, heat sustainability plans. And one of the things that they're looking at is, you know, focusing on the homes, and can we help seal the envelope? Can we help work on schools, for example, and seal some of the schools so that they have different scrubbers, because that's a very vulnerable population. They're also looking at, you know, collecting data. And while I agree that you know, we're doing the best we can on some of our data, and there's fair monitoring, but can we engage universities, and can we talk to, you know, San Bernardino or even UCR, and really start thinking about, like, how can we collect this data? Situational awareness. Can we start engaging the media to help us, right? Schools and parent alerts and all that good stuff. And then the other thing, the other challenge that we're seeing is because it is raining more, and we seem to be getting 1,000-year floods and flash floods a lot more often, that's going to create vector issues and allergy issues too. And so I think how we really think about this in terms of kind of just this region and this body leading those efforts, I think it's something that we should kind of engage in. And there's a federal government right now, especially with the EPA. And so I think it's an opportune time to really kind of at least construct a, I don't know what we call it. We call it climate change. We can call it dust suppression plan or the heat plan or whatever. But it's just thinking in a way that we're thinking about sustainability and resiliency in the desert. Because it feels like we're going to have some challenges moving forward.
Homer?
Thank you for your leadership. Love those big ideas. I want to voice a very specific, concrete idea. So those of you who gain awareness of grant opportunities can keep it in mind. In my observation, one of the reasons it took so long to clean up the silt in populated areas was the density of the landscapers to blow it back into the air, and in which case it just resettled someplace. And for 2 months, we watched this happen. They were pulling up by wind tunnels for changing routes so I wouldn't drive through the cloud and silt. And I think Palm Springs some years ago secured grant funds to help landscapers convert from gas to electric to address one issue. I would hope regionally we could find the money to help landscapers convert from blowing to suction back, so that the first time they remove that silt, instead of just blowing it to resettle, it's a huge issue in developed areas. Once the silt moves from undeveloped areas to developed areas, we just keep recirculating it and re-blowing it. So, put a little flyer on the idea as something to incorporate. It'll be a bold change, but we really need to try regionally for it to be effective.
I have two quick things, if you don't mind. One, because I know Emily Nelson would very much chime in on this very topic. And one of the things she has mentioned, we may want to work with our water districts on even allowing the use of a hose and your water efficient landscaping. Obviously, we're trying to conserve water, getting rid of the dust by washing things down might be the appropriate thing every once in a while, you know, these massive events. And we'll certainly consider the vacuuming as a third generation gardener. My parents, my mom, my dad, and my grandfather were gardeners. I remember
putting an industrial vacuum cleaner around yards. So I know they exist. They did 40 years ago or 50 years ago. And then with respect to tightening the building envelope, it is a subject of one of the next presentations related to EPA grant. So it should be a focus, particularly in places like the Coachella Valley. You know, hear more about that.
Just a couple quick comments. I don't see anybody else raising their hand. I drive from the East Valley back to the West Valley where I live about three times a week. And during the my hotelier said I can't use the term wind. I have to use therapeutic breezes. The term the Southern Crossing is well known for the wind and kind of benefits us sometimes because it blows a lot there. We don't want to see it as a benefit, but as you came through from east to west, you actually came out of that Columbia Mountains Ranch, the Indian Canyon area. Palm Springs has whitewater wash, and Josh Springs has Mission Creek. It's all protected lands, so it's still going to sit there, and it's not going to be covered. So coming up with ideas on how we monitor it, great ideas about suction instead of vacuuming instead of blowing. I deal with that on a daily basis and my other job at Landscaper and Country Club. It's low every Monday or the next member. But I would leave, and this it wasn't sitting on my but when I get the pump bed or open office, is I go outside to turn the phone and pumps several shots. Very important that we move forward with some sort of maybe recommendation and some thoughts in the future. Anyone else?
I had mentioned in the prior meeting that, of course, Desert Healthcare District teamed up with some other entities for the East Valley air quality component after the mulch fires. So there's additional resource and knowledge and monitoring that's happening out there, as well as education.
Yeah, and we didn't follow up with Desert Healthcare District and in town.
Yeah. So we're supposed to have a meeting with them next week. So sure. Their special meeting, they've been a little busy.
Sorry, that item's informational, so I don't need a motion or anything. Move on to item six. It's an update on the Coachella Valley Energy Commission and ongoing analyst of regional alternative governance, Martinez. Analysis.
Thank you. I'm the chair of members of the committee, and my name is Simon Hayes, too. Representation from the East Valley Communities that are served by IAD on electrical service. Letters, as you know, this has been an ongoing issue. And just kind of in the background, you all probably presented in the past, and there's an existing memory between the lead and there's a which is your current internal amount of ownership, and there's a little leader on the lease provision that is about 133. And begs the question how. What happens after that year, after that lease expires, and how do we get a representation for Coachella Valley Communities on electrical service matters? And as you all recall, there's been legislative attempts to try to address this issue. Recently, I just want to bring your attention to SB 170, which was the impetus for the LAFO study, allocated $500,000 for the political study that took a year and a half. Process and studies and interviews to complete. And finally, on November 30th of last year, the study was completed. And the objective of that was to eliminate a number of potential these options and make recommendations forward. Ultimately, on the lateral study, we will check the project because it was done. And it makes two recommendations, recommendation 1D and option 2D. Before being creating a joint vulnerability establishing a new variety of the utility or some variation depending on the role responsibilities of stakeholders here in the Coachella Valley and the viability of the whole form of the planet. So again, options puts us here for the future. And what's pushing what's in this writing ultimately based on these two recommendations is further analysis. To win these options to help the journey what the best match is. So what we are proposing here is bringing on professional consulting firm with experience on governance, strategic planning, facilitating these types of discussions to provide technical analysis, a financial analysis, legal, legislative analysis at the same time, so that they facilitate discussions with stakeholders to rules and rules of responsibility of the General Valley. The state to make a match and the streaming lines and send one of the easiest swiping left, right, on top apps. I'm going to believe that is the goal. So it is going to require more in-depth analysis as it relates just to these options. And we have put out an RFP to do just that. There's been a lot of discussion from the Mexico Valley Energy Commission regarding the analysis, specifically the need to conduct a financial analysis of the options, which is something that was lacking comprehensively in the MOP report. So we were aiming to do that. We're also aiming to look at what level of responsibilities do we want transmission, generation, distribution, customer service, trading. There's a suite of variables that go into determining what the best covering option is. We'll also take a look at enabling legislation. We know that there's some constraints as it relates to, for instance, a county may be able to participate in retail electric services. We'll also take a look at the financing policies based on the role and level of responsibility. And also the type of agreements we have put in place to make this happen. And last but not least, ensuring that our stakeholder engagement and input is in self-consciousness to the end of the day, determining what the best current option is moving forward. And again, it's not as easy as looking at those languages, but once the analysis is done, the objective is to come to a final determination on the best current option. So, again, go here to develop a strategic plan. We put out an RFP December 2023 that builds upon the NAPCO studies and really focused on those elements that were not just in that study and that the Catalan Valley Energy Commission has elevated as priorities to ensure that the consultant reviews and provides analysis on those topics that I just mentioned. The goal here is this year, January, here today, to award contract, do phase two, or we're calling phase two of the study, and I'm strategic plan, that is time in 2025, and we're going to go on to achieve next steps, towards implementation. So we did receive one proposal, from Leading Resources Incorporated, to the tune of $200,000. We did have a winner of this, total of three. We did also, motivate other consulting firms to apply as well, but it's going to be about Leading Resources Incorporated. We did put an evaluation committee together. There were some questions from the evaluation committee in this room we're able to address some of the major concerns, which related to ensuring that the consulting firm understood the objective of the proposal, what they can do with this and its scope. They did, one of the highlights there is that they did point out that they don't want to do another study. They were not interested in doing another study. They're interested in doing Thank you for that, ma'am. They're really interested in that as well. The other component that I just do want to highlight and that was particularly a big deal of study by the machine community was that they have a team of consultants with over 25 years of experience. In governance, strategic plan, leadership development. But there's a few particular gentlemen named Jim Tracy that brings a very strong portfolio of experience as it relates to providing financial analysis, which is one of the top priorities of the CVEC, the Energy Commission, as a leader of the United States. This is great to be able to swim off to move forward on these issues and better understand. Last but not least, they've done a lot of work with a lot of the utilities throughout California and the other parts of so we're going to be a firm with a track record of experience. And after the interview, the consultant, the evaluation committee felt more comfortable. I'm sure we'll make a recommendation to the executive committee forward to the contract contingent on our executive director negotiating cost-share agreements with the stakeholders and contingent on receiving grant rights from Chippewa Energy Commission's Governance Committee. I'm going to assume to meet this upcoming Wednesday to also discuss the proposal. So with that, we're going with it, but very important. Topic just as critical as the air that we breathe is also ensuring we have our issue of these one of our short lease value needs. So I'll turn it over to Mayor Thomas. If you want to add anything as venture or future, or have you actually questions to add?
Well, I'm a little disappointed that we actually only ended up with just one. And I was trying to look on IID's website to reflect on what their proposal was when IID brought them forward last year, which they were somewhat repeating the lack of study complement of work in addition to Jim providing some cost analysis. And I feel like that was in the 150 range. I don't remember. And I'll have to look at them. So I know that we started with a budget of 200 and that may or may not work based on how they go, but I have a question in terms of the cost share and for Tom, our executive director, in regards to CBWD. There seems to be some current barriers with the member participation of the CBWD representative on CBEC right now. And I know that you were tasked to try to mitigate that. Like, I could not expect that CBWD participates in the cost share unless they actually have a seat at the table.
Yeah, very, very well. That very well may happen. And kind of the background as briefly as I put it, I think the concern for Coachella Valley stakeholders is, you're going to have IID hire a consultant.
Correct.
And do all the work. And, well, they've got the money. They can do it. Well, these are small dollars in the whole scheme of things. And there was interest in having CDAC take on the role of managing the process. And I surveyed the key governmental players on the committee, including CBWD, who is on the committee now. Just I don't have somebody to fill that seat right now. And there was willingness to cost share. IID probably pay half. The other major members have paid for some portion. Again, it doesn't amount to much, but maybe it's even more than symbolic in that IID is not calling all the shots to their consultant. So what the mayor's pointing out is there's some kind of blood between dispute is between CBWD at times and IID, maybe at all times for 100 years or close to it. And that may affect the cost share. We're not talking about a lot. CBWD doesn't pay and do it. We'll figure it out. We'll probably have to allocate a little bit more money to each of the other participants.
So clearly have a vested interest. They're the highest resource user in our jurisdiction.
They certainly do, and they've got standing through the agreement as well. Yes, Mayor.
Good night, Chair. It seems to me that at least in some of the board meeting, that there's going to be some attention paid to kind of enabling legislative statutes that would enable as the county or probably CBWD to participate in this energy commission, whatever future it is. I think there needs to also be as much attention to the enabling statutes that allow cities already to provide that service. And so while we want to try to recreate or create a loop, because we don't need to, because we already have the new statute. And to the point about allowing CBWD to participate, I agree, but at the same time, CBWD has been collecting 8% of the revenue since 100 years, and they've made a lot of money, and nobody's held them to account. So they should pull in, and they want to be part of a future where I certainly don't want them to collect any franchise fees from my city. They've been collecting them for long. Give that up. And all the other cities get franchise fees from Edison. I don't need CWD to collect it on my behalf.
Indeed.
So just I think that needs to be said and it needs to be looked at and we can all just from there.
Well, I think the true picture is exactly what Tom started with is in the initial phase of having LRI present to us last year as the next step, we weren't even done with the LAFCO study yet, which really didn't offer much, but It's clearly just the direction of, you know, stay with IID, don't stay with IID. It was too weighted towards them. So we do need this neutrality, and having skin in the game is important, and having the water district there is also important. Just this is what I'm referring to in terms of there needs, might need to be some potential legislation efforts, even as we go towards the governance piece, because that is still a big issue, regardless of how we vet this down the road. You know, to the point of that control still exists, and it's not our county. I don't support this proposal. I'll make a motion to approve it, because we need to understand the more information we have to understand what this cost structure looks like, to either go on your own, do a JPA, form something new. This will be the next phase in helping determine those factors.
Tree ramification, there's a motion by Lakeith, second by Pomposer. Graphic, you have something to say?
Yes, quick.
Okay, got it. Any other comments or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Daniel, too, because he's been a great, great asset and collaborator on this, and
Senatorially, item 8D is the partnership with the Governor's Office of Planning and Research for the Environmental Justice Government to Government Program, and Eric is going to take.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The chief was not feeling well today, so we did appreciate not having his germs. Before you is an item about accepting funding for a partnership with the state. The Office of Planning and Research runs what's called IPAR, the Integrated Climate Adaptation Resiliency Program, and Jacob actually sits on the Technical Advisory Committee for that. And when he was at the city of Coachella, they reached out and talked to him about a possible partnership, and we're looking for partners, and he said, you should talk to CBEC. So, a while back, we partnered with the state on a grant application to the federal government. And in November, at our ENS committee, Tom announced that indeed the EPA signed off on a grant for extreme heat adaptation planning and the called community-based climate resilience. And essentially, this is a three-phase, three-year project. The first phase would be to define extreme heat risk, and look at some overall planning and policy guidance. The second phase would be to create an adaptation planning guide, and this would be largely run by a state. I do want to just reinforce that's largely a state-led effort. They would develop a communications plan, and they would look at some case studies. And phase three is really where CMAG and the city of Coachella would come in, and this is with outreach and engagement, and is serving as a model for the state. And for our partnership and work on the various plans and outreach, the state has found 100,000 voting for CBEC and 60,000 for city control. So the item before you is to refer the executive director to take the necessary steps to accept the funds and partner with all of the four main agencies, which are very detailed in your staff report, for this grant.
Any questions?
Move on for
okay.
So by Rich Morales, second by Paul Gozer. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Hillary?
Yes.
Thank you very much. This is item 8E, Regional Opportunities for the Environmental Protection Agency Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. Can I also hear?
Still me. Thank you very much, Chair. And this is what Tom was referring to earlier when some of the ideas were coming out during the air quality. Certainly, there is some money coming down. Speaking of money, we're all taking the feds have a grant program moving forward called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, or CPRG. And you may have actually heard about this at some of your various regional meetings. This is actually even came up at the California Transportation Commission meeting in December when we were there. The EPA has identified, again, a couple of phases of a project. The first phase is an initial training phase. And $1 grants went to metropolitan statistical areas as well as various states across the nation. And it's all geared towards what is called phase two. And this is the big dollars. This is $4.6 billion. But we're going to be available through a competitive process. To apply for the grants, you would need to complete the PLUE. under the phase one plan. And because we love outcomes 22, that you need to complete what's called a priority climate action plan, which is funded largely through the plan phase. So, we as a region, as a MSA, did receive planning dollars, that's $1 million planning dollars. It actually went to San Bernardino's COG, and they partnered with WRCOG and with CBAG to work on this plan group. And you may recognize those three agencies as also the partners for the Inland Regional Energy Network, or IREN. And so we didn't get too much caught up when the planning grant came down, except that the feds are trying to set a personal best record on how to get money out the door. They have decided that the PCAP needs to be done by March 1st. And your implementation application needs to be done by April 1st. At the same time, they're going to announce the awards in October, and projects need to be completed by 2030. I'll tell you, this timeline has pretty much every agency in the state that goes after really scrambling, trying to figure out what they can get on an application in time and also be competitive. You know, having them to be partners and all that. But well, before it's real key. The implementation dollars really geared towards projects that reduce greenhouse gas, promote equity, and again, can spend the money relatively quickly. So your project needs to be in a PCAP, which again is due March 1st for the application to be approved. So it is staff's approach that we are throwing everything but the kitchen sink into a PCAP, so that way it would be eligible for funding either now or in the future should this funding be available again. So the item before you is a couple of pieces. First, we have been working with your member jurisdictions and reaching out to all of your staff about some ideas of what to put in the PCAP, as well as generating some ideas of our own. We have some decarb programs for homes, in particular with income and disadvantaged communities, looking at electrification vehicles and the infrastructure needed. We have proposed creating Calvans or regionalizing a program such as the cities of Tesla sharing. We've thrown in ideas such as micromobility and promoting access to CV Link, upgrades to CV Sync. I told you everything but the kitchen sink. Turf rebates, reduction strategies, and then we asked all of our smart planners at our cities, what would you like to see? And we threw those up too. But for the actual app, so before you is a kind of a laundry list of ideas, and if you have more, please send them our way. We'll throw them in the application too. So that's the first part of the of our recommendation. The second part is to authorize Tom to take any necessary steps to partner with potential partners for an application. Right now, the application that's coming out of our IREN partnership focuses on Canadian infrastructure, building, government building decarb, and the programs of utility CBAG staff primarily is the residential and home decarb programs. But we also learned that South Coast is proposing some goods movement related application. So that is coming forward and we're keeping tabs on that. And the state may also be proposing some projects to be determined. So the authorization before you, we recognize this is really broad, but this is a very fast-moving project that's coming down, and we would seeking authorization to find partners. And okay, that's mine. Relatively brief.
Good question.
This is all I know. These are great efforts. There is billions of dollars out nationally, and Lower Region is hurting as itself to go after. And so I appreciate the everything that the kitchen sink knowledge and you, but at the same time, if we bring in, some additional to our region, that's good. And so I commend CBAG for, moving down this route and saying, hey, let's put together a good application. Because if we get, I'll give you an example in Coachella. Last year, we got a very nice Christmas present. We got $29 million from the state of California for a TCC grant, Transforming Climate Change Grant. This program is modeled after that TCC grant. And so if we can bring $50 million to this region and put it into some of our most vulnerable communities, wow, that's good. So I commend the efforts.
Thank
Thank you. If I could just feedback, I was really, we want to throw everything into the plan, the PCAP plan, because whether it's now or later, we want to make sure it's out. Right, we need to live something out. Our message to our IRIN partners is that there's a lot of money, particularly for IRIN, for government buildings, and our focus is about getting programs that really impact homeowners directly, and that's why we're pushing. The total IRIN grant application to be finalized, they could be asking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million for the whole MSA. But if from partners at South Coast are moving forward, we have an opportunity to partner with them and throw the same ideas there. We'll do that, or could you have a multiple state application? But the idea behind the recommendation is that it allowed us to do.
Mayor, the tightening the building envelope is really important. In all of us that complain about our energy bills, the cheapest one comes to another way to reduce those costs, and we know those costs, using those costs, particularly for low-income and disadvantaged households and communities, is really important. We actually took a page out of the Sentinel playbook, supervisor, and that is that there was certainly some funding there that led to some tightening the envelope on City of Coachella and maybe City of Desert Hot Springs too, perhaps, but at least the City of Coachella. So we're looking at perhaps replicating that type of program if we get the money. And of course, it's a big if, but for some reason they're trying to get money out just before the election.
Any other questions, comments, decisions?
I just want to ask, has there been any conversations in one of the school district and transit system departments?
I know you've done some outreach with some, right? We did do some outreach with school district. You did double back with the school districts if we had an outreach. There is there's some several regional calls going on. We make sure we reach it for sure. If we have anybody, so we can move to the answer.
Do you have a recommendation?
This is a motion by Coachella, second by Tommy.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Joey?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Move to item 9 is informational. Ask questions to the director. Do you have any questions on those? Item 10 is legislative items for the third hour report tonight. So we're going to move to public. Comments, we do have one public comment on non-veterinary items in the Remington.
We need to put that in for your informant.
I'm just going to remind everybody that you know you already heard of it, but when you change your reading cover, you can be from
So close public comments and move to announcements. Our next executive committee meeting will be February 26th. Is that correct? That's at 4:30 p.m. here at the CBAC conference room with no other food.
Mr. Chairman, we have it's been more than one meeting that we've had public comment that has made allegations and accusations of illegal practices. And I know that our council is listening to the meeting. And whether there's an order change, there's ample opportunity for the public, either written, in person, on agenda, off agenda items, and I see no violations being noted or conducted by CBED in any of its subcommittees.
And I just want to go on the record to say that I'm really comfortable with the way that we are conducting these, the ability for the public to participate, to listen and comment on these items as they have tonight. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Any other comments before we close the meeting? All right, you are going to adjourn. Thank you.